Pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast. And here are your hosts.
I thought it was probably one of our worst bowling displays that we've put on for a very long time. We bowled both sides of the wicket. We gave them a lot of freebies and it was pretty ordinary, to be honest with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, a.k.a. Menners, and that was Steve Smith blasting his bowlers for a subpar performance in the first game of the Champions Trophy, and we're going to look into all that this week. And joining me is an extra special guest, and I've sort of cut down this introduction as her appearances have become more frequent because it's just too long. So I'm going to just say one thing, current Sixers WBBL champion Lisa Stelaker, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Menners. Yeah, I like that. I like that tag. We'll just go with that.
Yeah, your list of achievements is so long. We'll be here for an hour just going through them. So yeah, the fact that you're the current Sixers champ is excellent, as I'm a big Sixers fan. How are you? You've just come back from the IPL. How was it?
It was great. Amazing. IPL is always a blast. It is the biggest show in the country. Everyone's talking about it. Billboards are up. Ads always on it. Everywhere you go, people are talking about it. So it's exciting. Obviously, I travelled around to different parts. So I was in Rajkot, Mumbai, Kolkata, Hyderabad and Kanpur. And Delhi as well. So got to see a bit of India and certain places that I hadn't been before. So a bit of sightseeing as well.
Excellent. What's the vibe like over there? You know, everyone says it just takes over the country. It's every night is about the IPL. I mean, I like on the weekend that there's double headers Saturday and Sunday. So it's like a whole day's IPL cricket. I mean, is it really as intense as it comes across on the screen?
Yeah, it is. And it's a shame that we here in Australia, we miss out on that, given the fact that, you know, we have a lot of our main players over there, our coaching staff, and actually in the commentary box, we had more Australian commentators there than Indian commentators. So Australia tends to dominate the IPL, but we kind of miss it back home. But the fact that, like I said, everyone talks about it, the stadiums get packed out, and because it is on every night, a little bit like the Big Bash, the nation stops, you know, at an 8 o'clock time, especially during the week. And then, like you said, weekends, they have the double headers. And actually this year they had a lot more double headers on Friday and Monday as well, because they tried to jam pack the tournament in for Champions Trophy.
Excellent. What's it like for you over there? Do you find that, I mean, I know cricketers when they're in India, they just can't, I mean, they can't even walk down the street without getting stopped for autographs. I mean, has that happened to you? Do you get a lot of...
Not as much as the guys. And I'm thankful for that, because I do feel sorry for the players and sometimes the commentators, because they can't go anywhere without being asked. And it's not autographs. It's the selfie.
That's the new autograph.
One photo, one selfie, please. So, that, you know, that's constant. And once you say yes to one or two, you actually get hounded. A lot of the time when I left the stadium with fellow commentators, I would actually just walk in front, because those guys would get hounded and I'd just stroll on through. I'd go, catch you guys later. And security guy would be worried about me. And I'm like, I'm not the one to worry about. How about you look after the main guys? I just walk through. So I like the fact that I go under the radar a little bit.
That's good that you go under the radar. And interestingly, how we met was you didn't go under the radar at my cafe.
No, so you were good.
You came into my cafe, Two Good Eggs Cafe, excellent cafe for
excellent.
Lunch.
Excellent, wonderful food.
And you paid with a credit card. And I just, as a habit of mine, I always look at the name on the credit card, because I had a restaurant for many years. And I just, didn't Lisa Stelaker play for Australia? And I think when I mentioned that to you, you were shocked that someone had brought that up to you over breakfast.
Yeah, I was shocked. And I kind of get probably a little bit shy, because you certainly don't expect it. And yeah, you sometimes you're not quite sure how you're supposed to react, I think. So
you said yes to coming on the podcast.
I did, and I'm still here, aren't I?
Yeah, a couple of years later. Just with the IPL, I actually this year engage with a lot more than I have. I bought the streaming pass, and it's something I've got to give you a heads up about. But I just thought there was a few things I liked about it. I liked the 14-game season, that every team plays each other twice. I would really like to see that in the Big Bash eventually, although I think Australia needs to work up to it. Do you think it could work here?
I think you've got to look at the timing. So obviously the tournament goes for 6 weeks. I don't know if we have 6 weeks in our schedule. I mean, that's something we're probably going to talk about a little bit later on. How do we fit in all of the formats and make sure that they're decent competitions or they mean something? 14 games and also to kind of get the international caliber. Are they going to have a 6 week break off from their international duties, or are we going to have players chopping and changing? Is that going to be an issue? Does it lose its interest? Do players, franchises get disadvantaged because of that? So I think there's a lot to go about it. I think the thing to remember is you want it to be relevant for the audience here, the domestic audience. Whilst the global audience is important from a TV rights deal, it's got to fit the domestic fan base. So I think at the moment we've probably got it right.
Yeah, I'd love the star power that the IPL has to start to come here, get more Aussie stars involved, even more international stars playing Big Bash. Because I think that's the key point of difference now, is that if I want to see Steve Smith and David Warner play T20 cricket, it's not for Australia and it's not for Sydney Sixers or the Thunder. It's going to be for their IPL team.
Correct.
So I think that's what we need to work towards changing.
Yeah, just on that, obviously whilst we're over there, we discuss, as commentators, we discuss different ideas and concepts. And one of the commentators suggested that basically T20 cricket should just be franchise cricket, and that every 2 years or 4 years, it's just the World Cup. So you don't actually have international T20 games as a series.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, and I think that might work.
I think it definitely would work. Now, something I just want to give you a heads up. And when you go across to the IPL next year, you can sort this out.
Okay, sure, because I'm the big wig.
Well, it does affect you. So, you know, they stream it worldwide. Someone has not realised that they just turn the stream on at the beginning of the day, like while you're all rehearsing and setting up. So if I want to go on, I can just see like Sanjay Mandrake talking to himself about his lines, or, you know, once there was Trent Bolt and I think Michael Clarke having a bit of banter where they didn't know the camera was on. I mean, I'm not the sort of person that would go trawl through that footage for gaffes or, you know, people dropping swear words or anything, but I don't know if it's a great look. I don't know if Sanjay Mandrake would want him talking to himself or pretending Matt Hayden's there broadcast to the whole world before he goes to air. So I just think tell somebody, turn the stream on when the coverage starts, not beforehand.
Yeah, well, it's one thing that I have learnt the hard lesson of is that whenever you've got a mic on as well or there's a camera,
Pretend it's on
because you could be in trouble. So I'm sure Sanjay Mandrake, if I was to tell him that people were seeing him practicing his lines, he'd hate that. So, yeah, you're right. Something needs to be done and I'll make a few calls.
Good. Excellent. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
As long as you feel better, Manners.
Well, I was worried for all you guys over there that one of you was going to do something really embarrassing and it would become a viral moment. I just know there's some real trolls out there, Lisa.
Yeah.
On Twitter. Now, let's get into the Champions Trophy. It's begun for Australia, and I think it begun quite badly for us. We were 3 for 53, chasing 235 off 33 overs. That's a Duckworth-Lewis target against New Zealand in our first game. And luckily the rain came, because I think we might have lost that game. What do you think?
I think we're in a lot of trouble. I think the fact that we had lost, even though Steve Smith was still not out, yes, and he's the anchor of the Australian side, you're putting a lot of pressure on our middle order that hasn't necessarily performed as well as we would have liked them to in the past. And coming over to England, I think we missed out on a practice game. So I think the players were a little bit underdone from the conditions point of view.
Yeah, and just a bad start. And the bowling was a big concern. So we heard at the top of the show Steve Smith say how bad the bowling was from Australia. We looked very rusty. We also dropped a catch. Your man Mitch Stark dropped a catch. They missed a run out in the field. Pat Cummins went for almost 7.5 and over. So did John Hastings. So it was a really wayward performance. I mean, can you pinpoint any reason? Do you think the fact that Hazelnut and Stark didn't play in the IPL affected their rhythm?
I think it did to a certain degree. I mean, Mitch Stark is coming back from an injury, so he hasn't probably had the best preparation that he would have liked.
He didn't seem to be swinging the ball as much as he normally does, and he's a victim of his own success. He normally gets a wicket in the first over, first or second over of every one dayer. I mean, there was that spell where he seemed to do it a dozen times, and if he doesn't get a wicket early...
We're saying he's bowling poorly.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the players... I agree with Steve Smith, missed their line and lengths, and they probably bowled a little bit too wide and they got punished for that. The great thing about the fact that it was washed out, we still get a point, and all they need to do now is they've got to almost play like they can't afford to lose a match. And when you kind of get in that situation, you expect your main players to stand up. And I do think we'll see the likes of Warner, Smith, Stark, Hazelwood all perform really well. And then you'll have the bursts of from, you know, maybe Travis Head, Finch, Enriquez, Stoinis if he comes in. So, yeah, I think we've still got plenty of firepower.
We can shake off the cobwebs. Do you think this pay dispute that's going on has been a distraction for the playing group?
I don't think so. I think they're aware of what's going on, but they're such professionals that they travel 11 months out of the year playing in all sorts of tournaments. They know when to turn it on and when to flick the switch off. So
you have to compartmentalize those type of issues, don't you?
And I think, you know, a lot of them would have gone through difficulties off the field in their personal life at some stages, and you may not even know that because their performances are still, you know, running slickly on the field. So I think they're professional enough, especially this group that have played a lot of cricket. They know what to put aside and when to focus.
Now, it was an ex-Aussie came back to haunt us. Luke Ronchi smashed 65 off 43 for New Zealand. He played 4 ODIs for Australia and was the one-time deputy for Brad Haddin. Now, opening the batting for New Zealand, looked to take over the Brendan McCullum role and just go for a slog early on. Kane Williamson scored an even ton. And look, I really think Kane Williamson is a fantastic batsman, very elegant. But of the elite batsmen that are playing at the moment, you've got Steve Smith, Joe Root, Virat Kohli, De Villiers. I think Williamson is probably the least exciting for me to watch and the least fluent. What do you think? I mean, great player. I'm not saying he's a great player, but if I were to choose which one to watch, he would be in the bottom of that list.
He almost goes unnoticed. So you've got Kohli, who's a passionate type player, who kind of you see more from a facial, emotional point of view. He's always interesting to watch. AB de Villiers for the fact that he can hit 360 and just put his foot on the accelerator when he wants and gets away with it. Smith, he's unorthodox. So Kane Williamson is almost too good. He's too technically correct that you just lose him. And I think from
he's very compact.
Yeah, I think from an opposition point of view, he does a lot of damage without people knowing. All of a sudden you look at the scoreboard and you're like, what, he's 50? How did he get to 50?
Yeah.
So I think in that sense, he can be even more dangerous than the others because you tend to notice them a little bit more.
Yeah, I just love watching De Villiers bat and Kohli when he's going, you know, just such a fluent stroke play. But yeah, Williamson, great innings, got us New Zealand to that total of 291. Josh Hazelwood came in to take 5 late wickets to finish with 6 for 52, which are the second best ever Champions Trophy figures. And that gave Australia a sniff in the game because New Zealand looked like getting well over 300. And Josh Hazelnut reined them in. Just interesting the way Hazelwood has adapted to English conditions in the past. We saw the last Ashes tour, he struggled to find his length in England. Probably needs to be a bit fuller than he normally bowls in Australia. I still think he's sort of still coming to terms with those conditions.
Yeah, that's the great thing about travelling around the world. You may be very successful in your own conditions or maybe a certain subcontinent or something like that, but you've got to keep adapting and changing. And it does take time. And you've got to be able to really have played a decent amount of cricket there. And what we've seen as well, because a lot of the Australian players don't go over and play county cricket, especially our top guys, their opportunity is when they're in the Aussie colours. So it will take them a little bit of time. Hopefully, because of this washout, they got their practice run. So they've got that practice match that they've missed. And now they can find those right lines and lengths.
Yeah, I think Hazelnut just needs to go a foot or two fuller on English conditions. So Australia, they got away with a no result and a point from that game. Now they play Bangladesh and England in the remaining group games. both effectively must-win games now. The Bangladesh game is tonight, so you'd expect Australia to win that one. But then the big one is this Saturday night, England v Australia. It's effectively, you would think, going to be a straight knockout game, perhaps. Or at least if Australia loses, they'll be out, which is great motivation for England. I thought they looked a little bit below par with the ball, though, against Bangladesh, England. I don't know if their bowling attack has the firepower to win this Champions Trophy. England have got a great batting lineup, but if I read out Mark Wood and Liam Plunkett and Jake Ball as their three main quicks, I don't think that holds a lot of fear for the Aussie batting lineup.
No, it doesn't. That's where their inexperience comes in. Yes, they've got the experience and runs on the board, and the fact that they've got those senior players in their batting order, they are missing the likes of someone like an Anderson or people that have played a lot of international cricket. Yes, they might have a good day out, but are they going to be consistent? At the moment, I don't think so.
It's not a very threatening bowling attack. The fact that they left out Adil Rashid for the first game, I find very strange, because he's someone that has done well in one-day cricket, and you would think, especially coming up against Australia, you would want him in there because
he will be in there. They know that the Australians struggle against spin, against players that are able to bowl wrong-uns, and he bowls a lot of them and very effectively. So I think that you'll see him come into the side.
And he could do some damage to our middle order. So could Moeen Ali. I mean, we've given away easy wickets to Moeen Ali in the past. So
it's called egos.
It is called egos. You just... The Aussie batsmen want to hit him over the top and they keep getting out. What about for the Aussie spinner, Adam Zampa? He missed out on the first game. I think he missed out because of his haircut. But I think it would be good to have a spinner in there. With the way our lineup looks, it would be good to have that option.
Well, you've got to think that the only spinner at the moment that we have given the side against New Zealand is Travis Head, because it looks like Steve Smith isn't using Glenn Maxwell, which is a shame because I thought he bowled really well in the IPL. I think he started to get a little bit more comfortable in his own skin.
I think we can safely assume now that Steve Smith does not rate Maxie's bowling, because this is an ongoing theme for the last year. He's bowling less and less, so yeah.
Yeah, it is disappointing. But I also think by having a leg spinner in the side, regardless of what format it is, numbers show you that they get you wickets. They may go for runs, and Zampa's the type of player that might, you know, go for runs.
But he's just come on leaps and bounds. The white ball cricket.
I mean, you've got to remember, a year ago he was the number one ranked bowler in ODI cricket for the most wickets, and then he was left out in our at the start of the season, wasn't he? So I think this is his time to come back in and have a big impact.
I just think he adds variety, you know, with all our quicks. And then you've got Moses Henriques bowling medium pace. Having a spinner in those middle overs can just change the pace of the game. Another one that someone that could change the pace of the game we didn't see in the first game was Chris Lynn. Now, do you think he can bring his 20-over game to the 50-over game? Because we saw in one of his one-day international appearances, he tried to play it like a T20 and it didn't work. Do you think he can adapt to the 50-over game?
Yeah, I think he can. I think he's certainly matured a lot, because obviously there's a lot of expectation on him now. Every time he goes out to bat, everyone expects a certain style and for him to be really successful. He set IPL alight with the first innings for Kolkata Knight Riders, and unfortunately he redid his shoulder. So we didn't see him for a huge part of it, but when he came back in, he was able to pick up where he left off. So I think he's just in the form of his life at the moment. So I think he certainly can adapt to the one-day format.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to get in for any of these Aussie games, whether they're going to stick with the same 11. But
that's the problem with this tournament. There's only it's such a small handful of games. It's, do selectors chop and change, or do they just stick with the same core group and away they go and hope that they find their form pretty quickly?
Well, I guess Henriques playing gives you one more bowling option, and you'd probably want Lynn to come in for Aaron Finch, but he's been in pretty good form before the tournament. So he's just caught between two players just holding on to their spots. So that's the Australia v England game this Saturday. Huge game. Can't wait. I'm going to stay up for that one. I think it's a 7:30 start, Australian Eastern Standard Time. A couple of other things with the Champions Trophy. I thought South Africa looked really good in beating Sri Lanka by 96 runs. This is just the sort of tournament South Africa could win because it's not a World Cup. It's so they could.
Still an ICC event.
They've won this. They won the very first Champions Trophy. So they like these sort of second rung ICC events where the pressure's a bit down. But their bowling attack of Rabada, Morkel, Parnell and Imran Tahir just looks really well balanced. You've got Tahir in the middle overs and Rabada coming on early with that pace. So I think they are really looking good for the semis.
Yeah, I think they're a quality side. I think they've got the right mix of youth and experience. And their youth, you look at De Kock, Rabada, they're form international players.
There's probably still some lingering disappointment about the exit from the last World Cup. They'll be looking to at least win something.
I'd like to think that at some point these guys have to learn to move on and find ways of, okay, let's just focus on this tournament. I think if they get into the final, that's
easy
when,
for us to say when we haven't been there.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking loss.
But I think if they were to get into the final, then you would think that certain emotions will start to come back into that team, and those that were part of that World Cup campaign will start thinking,
are we going to choke again?
Yeah. Can we win?
Can we choke again? Now, India v Pakistan was played overnight. I only saw bits and pieces, but India thrashed Pakistan again. And it's just Pakistan cannot beat India in these big ICC events. So I think a billion people in India will be dancing around at the moment and celebrating.
Yeah, they certainly will. Some really good, strong batting performances. Their batting looks really good. And Hardik Pandya, who in the IPL basically played the same role as what he just did last night. The last year his IPL was ridiculous. I think he only scored 47 runs out of the total tournament, whereas his strike rate was so impressive this IPL. He's just got the confidence. He wasn't bowling a lot, so I was really glad to see that he was able to pick up wickets as well. So he seems to be very comfortable in what his role is. And I think when those players that are just under the mega stars start performing well and consistently, India become a very dominant side.
Yeah, and they've got the Bumrah bowling really good death overs, which is just a great weapon at the end there. So India are a team to watch, and Pakistan, well, they've lost again to India. Well, that was our little chat about the Champions Trophy. Now we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back with a former Australian coach's crazy idea for the Australian summer.
In just those 15 overs. So he should have something left in the tank here for a late surge. The crowd will get behind him. You can hear them starting to clap. Johnson strikes, and listen to 90,000 fans at the G.
You're listening to the Australian Cricket Podcast. Fond memories there of Mitch Johnson at the Boxing Day Test in 2013, getting Ben Stokes out. And, Lise, John Buchanan, former Australian coach, has got an idea to scrap the traditional Boxing Day and New Year's Test and go down to a three-test summer. Now, what's your initial reaction? When I just throw that at you, what do you think?
It could work.
Wow, okay. My initial reaction was to reel up in horror. And if I'd seen John Buchanan at that moment, I would have told him what I thought. But then when I sort of sunk in and I could accept the loss of two iconic tests, I maybe came around a little. But, yeah, your reaction is much better than mine. I was horrified at losing those tests.
Well, I think you've got to look at who we're playing. So five Ashes tests means a lot. Five tests against West Indies, probably not great. And having gone to the SCG for a long time to watch the fifth test match of a series, a lot of the time the series is already gone. So it's kind of a dead game. And obviously you've got Jane McGrath Day, so that kind of creates a bit more buzz, and the first day of the test match creates buzz. But then, other than that, if the series is lost, then the fans won't come out. So if you have a three-test series, it's going to go down normally to the last test. So, and I also think I feel sorry for the players that are trying to get into the test side. All they have to prepare themselves is Big Bash. That's white ball cricket, four overs with the ball, and, you know, normally about 15 15 balls to face in a match. So they're not getting the preparation. So ideally, from a preparation point of view, they want to be playing shield cricket. But the Big Bash is very important during that the school holiday period.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about the Sydney Test, because it never used to be the end of the summer. There was always Adelaide and Perth after the Sydney Test, and it would be in the middle. So Buchanan's idea is that long-form red ball cricket should be at the beginning of the summer until mid-December, and then the Big Bash should come in and take over until February. So no Test matches when the Big Bash starts. And then at the end of February, you can start the traditional 50-over one-day internationals in February, March.
So that means you would see the Australian international stars in their Big Bash.
Exactly. And Buchanan also says that it would sort of solve any confusion in the marketplace when you got fans. Maybe there's a Test match on during the day and then a Big Bash game at night. You would take that all away and just have it very segmented parts of the summer. I mean, I think it could work. My fear is, though, that the Boxing Day Test is one that I couldn't lose. I think that you really need that iconic Test match. It's a worldwide event. And if you were to take that away, you're effectively marginalising Test cricket, and almost you're effectively signing its death certificate if you just put it sort of at the beginning of the summer. And yeah, I don't know if the Boxing Day Test could go. The Sydney Test, though, as much as I love it and I think it's the best way to start every year, if that were to go, I could probably live with it.
That's interesting, given you're a Sydney sider and that you love going to the Sydney Test. I agree with you. The Boxing Day Test, there's something very iconic after Christmas Day. Either you, if you're in Melbourne, or you fly down and you get your tickets, Boxing Day Test is great. And then for the rest of us, we just sit on the couch and with all the leftovers from Christmas Day, we just feast on that and just sleep and wake up when there's wickets and exciting parts of the game. But I think that we've got to be willing to be open-minded about different scheduling. I think there's so much cricket taking place. We've got to find the right time for each of the formats so that not one is affected by the other. And I think we saw that last summer, the fact that in the same city, there was a Big Bash game going on to the Test match.
Yeah, in Sydney it happened.
Yeah, and there was hardly anyone there but sold out at the Big Bash. And we don't want to do that.
No,
I don't
not
think
at all.
You want to do that.
And one thing that Buchanan's theory had was that he had some kind of trickle-down effect, that if you do this, you would have more top players playing shield cricket, then you'd have more top players playing club cricket, and it would just sort of feed through the whole system. And my only experience is that trickle-down economics has never worked, and I don't know if trickle-down cricket has ever worked. So I don't know if he's a bit off with that, but I think Buchanan, if he wants to stop the confusion in the marketplace and strengthen the Big Bash, this could work.
Yeah, it could work. I guess his idea about more experienced players playing club cricket, it's well known that everyone's concerned about club cricket around Australia. The fact that your better players aren't playing, so your shield players hardly play.
Yeah.
Internationals never play, and that's fine, understand that. But shield players might play one or two. It means that there's no senior players there within that club system helping out the younger guys. And we're seeing a lot of older club players that have been a part of the club since they were 15, 16 years of age. They kind of, when they retire from maybe first class cricket, they're not even playing club cricket. So maybe it's a way of trying to keep that experience and help develop and grow. Because at each level, we talk about it being, you know, the real breeding ground for our next stars, future stars. So trying to strengthen grade cricket is certainly going to be an important part of that.
So that's a crazy idea from John Buchanan, but it may have some merit, and we'll see how that one plays out. I think it's going to be a while, though, before we see two tests scrapped. But the schedule is an evolving thing, and throughout history it has always changed. So who knows what the future might bring. Now, Lisa, we'll get to the meaty issue. We'll get to the meaty issue of this podcast. Now, you're a member of the Australian Cricketers Association Executive Committee. So we have a real window into what's going on between the ACA and Cricket Australia at the moment. I guess, what is the current state of play for the listeners? It seems like that the negotiations are being played out on Twitter and on press releases, and the two parties aren't meeting at all. Is that right?
Well, at the moment, the ACA has rejected Cricket Australia's proposal, and ACA has put their own proposal in front of CA, we've realised that nothing has progressed and ACA has asked for mediation and Cricket Australia has rejected that simply because what our proposal was and what CA's proposal is completely different. So we've got to try and find a middle ground, and mediation was certainly a starting point. So at the moment, we're trying to work through that and trying to see if we can get to the table to really start to discuss the proposal. From our point of view, we've rejected Cricket Australia's and we haven't really heard their thoughts about our proposal. So we've got to start to do something because time's running out.
How do you feel about the negotiations at the moment?
Well, with all MOU negotiations, they tend to go right to the wire, and this one's certainly going to do that. I guess from my point of view, it's been interesting to see how it's played out. The fact that a model that has been part of Australian cricket for 20 years is all of a sudden scrapped, and no real reasons as to why it's being scrapped except that it just needs to be adapted, doesn't make sense to me. I think it's important to kind of, you can't just completely change the goalposts and expect us to move on. What's worked so well for 20 years, we'd probably like to start there. And then obviously there's plenty of flexibility with what the ACA is suggesting. It's just more about just the model. Who cares about the numbers at the moment? But it's the revenue share is what the players want.
Yeah, I have two main points to make. Firstly, I think what Cricket Australia is missing from this whole thing is it's very hard to take something away from someone once you've given it to them. The players have the revenue share model, and to take it away is almost foolhardy to think that they can just do that, what they're proposing. But also, I think Cricket Australia are missing something here, that they're making the current players responsible, or the ACA, for this decision about the revenue share model. And I'm pretty sure the current playing group and the current ACA do not want to be the ones that give up a revenue share model for future generations, because once it's gone, they're not going to give it back. High-level corporate negotiations, it's very hard to get them to give something back worth tens of millions of dollars once it's been taken away. So there's a legacy issue there that I think the cricketers and the association feels that has to be sorted out.
Yeah, I think spot on. I think even though James Sutherland, in a letter to the players, which was leaked to the media, said that let's do a deal that's right for this group, and in 5 years' time, then we can do another deal. I think the players, especially the current players, understand the importance they have now for the future generations, and they want to set it up. This isn't about numbers or amount of dollars. This is about a pure partnership. They feel that they have a seat at the table whilst they have the revenue share model. Once you take that away, they lose that seat, and they don't want to lose it.
Yeah, and I guess it comes about control as well. You know, there's a sense here that Cricket Australia want to take control of the finances completely and have full reign over it. And the players, obviously, as you say, want a say in that. Moving forward, there's been a couple of things that have been used as negotiation tactics. One of them is the pay for women's cricket is something that you're intimately associated with. What do you think about the way women's cricketers are being used as a pawn in this negotiation? And what's the general feel among the women's cricket community about this negotiation? Because you're hearing a lot from the men, but not so much from the women.
Well, what CA have proposed with the numbers that they've given looks good at the moment, and it's certainly a great start and something that ACA has been forging for. So good to see that they've taken on some of the issues raised by ACA. As for are they great numbers, I'm sure they are, but we need to probably get the bigger picture and the financial records to know that they are good numbers. As for the CA using that as, I think you said, negotiating tactics. I think it was a great story, so why wouldn't they share that? And it just shows that they are serious about women's cricket, which is great to see. The female players are behind ACA 100%. They understand that this isn't a negotiation just about them. It's about all cricketers. So it's not dividing them. So whilst at the moment it looks like the female players will receive, you know, a hefty increase, they're concerned about state cricket, male and females, so to ensure that they're okay. I think that's the main thing that we've seen in this negotiation, that whilst the best players in the country, male and female, will profit from Cricket Australia's current proposal, they're more concerned about, well, we want to make sure that all cricketers are going to be safe and the revenue share allows them.
What about the women's cricketers and the state cricketers being locked out of a potential BBL windfall? I mean, is that part of it, that when the TV rights for the WBBL and BBL go up, I mean, it's going to be a huge increase on what's come before. I mean, effectively, if there's no revenue share model, the players are locked out of that who built made the product.
Exactly. I think you've got to understand, and I've said this before, that I think there's three key stakeholders in the game. Firstly, no one really owns it. I think the administrators, the players and the fans / grassroots cricket really own the game. So all three need to work well together. Both Cricket Australia and ACA have identified that more money needs to be put into grassroots. Remember that the players have also given, I think, $85 million back into the game. So it's not like they're taking all the money for themselves and putting it in their pockets. They're actually investing it back as well. So I think that's why they want to continue with this revenue share model. And whilst everyone is on board and they are all united, I think they're trying to make Cricket Australia just listen to what they're saying.
Yeah, and I guess we've got about 3 weeks until the current agreement runs out. What's your gut feeling? Are we going to have a sort of late on the 29th of June, you know, a press release agreement has happened, you know, or is this heading towards an impasse?
I'd like to think that a deal can still be done. I think both parties are really hopeful for
that. If you're not talking, though.
Sorry?
It's hard if you're not talking to
make
a deal.
Yeah, it is hard. I think there is talking going on, whether it's actually at the negotiating table. You know, that's just let's see what happens and what unfolds in the next 3 weeks. But both parties want a deal done. We don't want to put the players in an awkward position. We want to see Ashes take place here in Australia, both the male and female teams. So I do believe a deal will be done. Will it be done on the 29th? I don't know.
Who's doing the negotiation for Cricket Australia? Who's at the table?
Kevin Roberts is the main negotiator, and obviously they'll have a senior management group that deal with that.
Yeah. So it's not, James Sutherland's not at the table.
Not yet.
Not yet. He might have to come in and sort things out. Well, that's a great insight into the current pay dispute. Now we're going to do something a bit lighter, Lisa, after that. And because you're at the IPL, I've got an IPL winners and losers list, Aussie winners and losers from the last IPL, and I'm going to run a few past you. The first winner of the IPL, the first Aussie winner, was Mitch Johnson. He bowled the last over of the final with Pune needing 11 to win. He dismissed Steve Smith and Tiwari, and his team, the Mumbai Indians, won by just one run. So Johnson starred in the BBL final and the IPL final, quite the double.
Yeah, great performance by him. And the fact that throughout the IPL, he hadn't played a lot of games. So the Mumbai Indians had decided to go a lot with Mitch McLenaghan and had performed well previous year and also this year. So when he did come in, he had that impact. And you know what? He's the type of player, big games, he stands up, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, that was great theatre, that last over of the IPL final. Well, my first Aussie loser for the IPL was our captain, Steve Smith. Now, although he skippered Pune to the final, he really got the chase wrong in the IPL final. His tactics were too conservative. Smith himself made 51 off 50 balls, but he made a key mistake in allowing Mumbai Indians to come back into the game and allowing the Mumbai death bowlers of Malinga and Bumrah to have a chance to sort of throttle Pune. So Steve Smith, great tour of India with the bat on the test match, batted really well in the IPL, but in the end he walks away empty-handed. Poor smudge.
Yeah, he did captain the side well. Obviously, there were a few issues. He had taken over the side from MS Dhoni.
There was a few moments there where it looked like MS was captain.
Yeah, well, he's Captain Cool, isn't he? And he has the respect of all of the Indian players. Remember, it's an Indian domestic competition. So I'm sure MS Dhoni had a lot to play with the success of Pune during the tournament. So Pune did well because they perform poorly at the start. But I agree with you. You've got to remember that Mumbai Indian bowlers, they're death bowlers, and you mentioned Malinga and Bumrah, were so effective throughout the IPL that you almost need to go hard in the middle overs to give you yourself that time at the back end, because you're going to find it difficult. And once you start losing a couple of wickets and new batsmen come in to face those type of bowlers with the pressure situation, you'd always go the bowler side.
Yeah, but look, he was fourth on the list of run scorers for the IPL, and I guess great experience for Smudge. What do you think of Smith, just generally?
I think he's a young captain that's learning. I saw Mark Taylor on Sports Sunday, and you know, he rated him, I think, 8.5 or something along those lines, saying that, you know, he's got to keep learning about how to deal with players. Management that needs to be handled needs to be handled well. I think by captaining an IPL side, he's dealing with so many different types of personalities. You've got your franchise owners as well, the coach, MS Dhoni in your side. So I think those type of experience will certainly help him. I think he's still a young captain, and I think he learnt a lot last summer, the fact that they lost in Sri Lanka, lost in South Africa, lost the first part of the summer, and he turned it around. And since then, you know, he's looking good. So he's going really well.
I didn't realise he has the same birthday as the War Brothers, so...
Yeah, I noticed that this year as well on Twitter.
Yeah, so... all right, so the second winner of the IPL for Australia was Dave Warner. Although his side could not complete the heroics of winning the IPL like they did last year, Warner was the top run scorer with 641 runs at a strike rate of 142. He hit the highest score of the tournament, 126, and he hit the equal most sixes in the tournament. And just a great effort with the bat for Warner. We saw Virat Kohli had a great IPL last year, couldn't repeat the same form with the bat this year, but Warner, back-to-back IPL years, has done so well.
Yeah, he's been outstanding, his consistency. I think all of the commentators were saying over the last 4 or 5 years, he's consistently scored over 500 runs. So that's just a credit to him that he's able to perform when he needs to.
And as the pressure of captaincy.
Correct. And I think he's done a really good job with that side. And for them to do, obviously win it last year, but then again perform really well. And throughout the tournament, they were favourites. Them and Mumbai Indians looked the most solid from their lineup. So, yes, he would be disappointed that he wasn't able to get them through again. But I think Tom Moody and David Warner, there's a winning combination there.
Certainly. And Warner's just done so well changing the impression of him worldwide now, from a firebrand and getting in fights in a pub to a respected leader. Now, the second Aussie loser of the IPL, but in my mind, he's really a winner. Usman Khawaja was paid $195,000 to carry the drinks for 6 weeks for Pune. So he didn't play one game the whole IPL, and he didn't play one game in the whole Australian Indian Test Tour. So all in all, after 4 months in India, Usman Khawaja didn't play a game, but came back with a couple hundred K in his bank balance. So cricket's the loser, but really he's a winner.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. I guess I'll probably look at it with him in the sense that he would have been frustrated. I saw him a couple of times when I did the matches, and I said, "Do you remember how to bat?" And he goes, "No, I don't actually."
Can that do damage to a player though? Like just lose your rhythm, the frustration of just not getting out in the middle and seeing your mates do it all day.
Look, when I spoke to him, he had the right attitude towards it. I mean, we saw that with the tweet as well that he put the water boy saying, "Thanks, India, I had a great time," and he tweeted the water boy. So it was perfect. He can still have a laugh. I think it depends on how he tackled his 4 months. If he thought, okay, look, I'm not going to get a game, but I'm going to work on a few things for the when I do come back here to play or for the Shield season or whatever, he could actually use this as a valuable time, as almost a pre-season for himself, to get fit, to spend hours in the nets working on things. So I hope that that's exactly what he did and just thought this is a great pre-season camp.
Well, we've seen a particularly relaxed demeanour from Usman right throughout the summer, so this layoff would have certainly tested how he can, if he can stay in that mindset. The next Aussie winner of the IPL was someone we mentioned earlier, Chris Lynn. He topped the strike rates of all batsmen over 55 runs in the IPL. So he scored 295 runs at the whopping strike rate of 181. Him and Sanal Narine put on like 105 overs to start a game for the KKR. How have the Indians taken to him? I mean, is he a bona fide star there now?
Yeah, he is. So I'm going to be very interested to see what he goes for next year, because a lot of people will be wanting him to be in their side. The fact that he was able to turn it on, and even when he sat out that big chunk in the middle, when he came back again, he was able to pick up where he left off. He's just such a clean striker. On their big screen, they kept going the Linsanity as well. So that started to catch on, as it did here in the Big Bash. So he's certainly going to be a star over there, and he deserves to be as well.
Now, a fallen star, perhaps, and the final loser for this segment is one James Faulkner. The poor guy has had a rough IPL. He scored 54 runs at 13 at a strike rate of below 100, which is pretty bad in the T20. Games, he only took 6 wickets at 43. He almost went for a run rate of 10 and over. You add that to his omission from the contract list, his omission from the Champions Trophy squad. James Faulkner is in absolute free fall at the moment, and I guess his redemption story is waiting to be written. Will it happen, Lisa?
I don't know. I guess this will test him as a player. Cricket Australia has always spoken about they want their players to be resilient. Well, he's certainly down the bottom of disappointments. Obviously, whilst he was over there in the IPL, he found out the news about the contract, about not being selected in Champions Trophy. So I felt for him, and he wasn't even in the playing 11 for Gujarat Lions as well. So he would have found it really difficult, and probably showed in his performances when he did get the opportunity. I think it's important for him to get back home, be around his family, his friends, and remember why he wants to play cricket. It's for the love of it. Yes, you want to get into certain teams and you want to be performing well, but if he goes back to just the basics, hopefully he'll put in a good pre-season, and then we'll start to see him the way that we've always seen him, as a dominant player for Australia.
Yes, a few years ago, just as an absolute superstar for the Aussie One Day side, now probably working out what he's going to do next. He could just go from T20 tournament to T20 tournament and make plenty of money. Now, finally, you're going to have to help me with this one, Lisa, because I can't work out where to put Glenn Maxwell, whether he's a winner or a loser from the IPL. Now, although he was second on the strike rate table behind Chris Lynn and joint first on the sixes table with Dave Warner, he was also joint first on the ducks table with 3 ducks. So he was there up the top of 3 tables. And then at the end, he seemed to fall out with his coach Virinder Sehwag and his team, the Kings 11 Punjab, in a knockout game, were rolled for 73. Was it a good or a bad campaign for Maxi, or somewhere in between?
I think it was somewhere in between. I think that he obviously took over as the captain as well. First time he captained. I thought he did a great job in that. So I would actually probably put him on a win scale, because even the previous IPL, he didn't perform as well with the bat. He didn't really bowl as well. So he had more of an impact in the games. And obviously leading the side, I thought he did fairly well. So I think I'd put him in the win category.
What was going on with Sehwag and him at the end of the tournament? I mean, you don't want your coach and your captain having especially a public spat like that.
No, you certainly don't. You need to keep that behind closed doors, and you always, in front of the public, present one front. So there seems to be some issues with Kings 11, obviously changing coaching staff, a lot of changes in the coaching staff from last year. Joey Dawes was part of it, not renewed. And there was a lot of changes in the team as well. So they're still trying to figure out what their group is and what they need to do to win. They need to ensure, and we've seen this over the last few years, any IPL team that keeps their core group of players and predominantly core group of coaching staff tend to do well. The chop and change thing does not work.
Well, Maxi will be better for the experience, and it was actually interesting to see him lead a side. He had a certain different persona about him. I don't know if you were around him, but I know how he coped with the responsibility.
He seems a pretty laid-back character. He doesn't seem to be...
He just seemed wide-eyed the whole time. The whole tournament, just wide-eyed.
I think he was just maybe in awe of the responsibility that he had. You know, he's never had it. He's just kind of cruised behind and done his own thing, whereas I think he probably learned a few lessons of how to lead a group of players. I think he'll be certainly better for the experience. You've got here, will he captain again? I'd like to think so. I think he's shown enough that he could potentially captain again. Sometimes
is Sehwag making this decision? Because if he is...
Who knows who makes the decisions when it comes to franchise cricket?
All right, well, that was Mena's winners and losers from the IPL. And listeners, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with what's made us happy in the cricket week. But before we do, I just want to let you know that the Have a Go Your Mug promotion is back this year, this time. If you leave a review for the podcast on the iTunes or whatever app you listen to the show, you will go in the mug and in the draw for a Have a Go Your Mug mug. So please, if you've got time, do that and then email me that you've left a review so I can put you in the draw. Remember, if you want to get in touch with the podcast, we're on Gmail, AusCricketPod. That's AusCricketPod@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter @AusCricketPod. We're on Facebook as the Australian Cricket Podcast. And please tell all your cricket-loving mates about the Australian Cricket Podcast.
But you can't afford to lose 6-7 wickets for 30-odd runs in six overs. I mean, that's when all momentum goes out the innings. Australia won that game, I think, in that period. Even though they got off to a slow start with the bat, I still think they'd have chased down that total today. I can happily say that now because it's abandoned and no one will know. But by resting...
Do you believe that?
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. That was Graham Swan for Test Match Special, BBC Test Match Special, saying he thinks Australia would have won that game against New Zealand. So I don't know what game Swanee was watching. And BBC Test Match Special is celebrating their 60th anniversary this year. So congratulations to them. Swanee, pull your head in, son. I don't know. I think Swanee wasn't really watching. Now, let's get into our final segment. And it's what's made us happy in the cricket week. And I've got two. So I'll start off with my first one, Lee. So I'll get the ball rolling. And when I was interviewing Sean Carey from Cricket Australia, he told me that there was one international cricketer that requested a chicken burger, chips and a can of Coke at every break while they were touring Australia. And I think we may have found a suspect for who did that. One Umar Akmal for Pakistan was sent home from the Champions Trophy for not being fit enough. Can you believe that? And so I think we may have a suspect for who was eating too many chicken burgers down under.
Oh, I was thinking of the Australian team. I have a few names I thought that could have been.
Yeah, anyone?
Well, I'll just keep it to myself.
They said that Sean said it was a tourist though. So
oh, okay.
He didn't throw any of his local players under the bus. But Umar Akmal sent home for being overweight from the Champions Trophy. Not something you'd expect. Did you ever have anything like that in your career?
Oh, there were plenty of times that they spoke to me that I needed to get fitter. And you just got fitter because you wanted to play for your country.
I wonder if Umar's doing laps at the moment. What's made you happy in the last week of cricket, Lisa?
Well, I was very fortunate enough to get an invite by Cricket Australia up to Brisbane on Saturday night. It was an opportunity to farewell the current Australian squad that goes over to England to play in the Women's World Cup in England. But they did also bring the six winning teams that have won World Cups, all their support staff, partners, flights, accommodation.
Was it a wild night?
It was a wild night, but they presented from 2005, the winning teams never received a winning medallion. So Cricket Australia with ICC minted some winning medallions and presented that to the players. But what I really enjoyed and what made me happy was to see the 1978 team get treated like they should be treated. You know, had limousine drivers waiting for them to be picked up at the airport. And they were made to feel special. And hopefully it brings, especially in women's cricket, since integration has happened, we've kind of forgotten about the past. Hopefully this bridges the past to the future. And the fact that a lot of the current team, Elisa Healy was certainly one of them, that was going up and speaking to former past Australian players about their campaign, what they learnt about touring, how they could approach it as well. So it was a wonderful night. It was a late night, that's for sure. A lot of stories were shared, and it was really nice to be part of it.
Well, I imagine that 1978 team must have had it completely different to what even you had it. I mean,
well, it was a round robin competition. It was 60 overs. And, you know, they had to fund themselves. So that's why in the early stages of Women's World Cup, it wasn't every 4 years. It was whenever whoever could raise
afford to
the,
go.
Yeah, whoever raised the money. Yeah, so it was certainly different. But wonderful to hear their experiences.
And actually, if you want to hear about how Women's World Cup started, I recommend downloading the interview I did with Alison Mitchell, where we talked about how Rachel Hayhoe-Smith and a benefactor started the Women's World Cup all those years ago. And look, I've got one more thing that's made me happy this week, Lisa. And I think a lighthearted thing to end the podcast on is Adam Zampa has got the worst haircut in international cricket at the moment. He's got some version of a peroxide bleached mop on his head at the moment. Now, last year he had the headband, with the Nathan Bracken headband, which was pretty bad. And then he lent it to Steve Smith, and he obviously never got the headband back because he's now gone and bleached his hair, and it was just an awful haircut.
Yeah, I've seen it on Twitter. Doesn't look great. But you know what? The Australian team has always done things a little bit differently. I remember around Jason Gillespie, Brett Lee, there must have been a competition for the ugliest sunglasses because they all had terrible sunglasses when they played. So maybe we're starting to move into the terrible haircuts.
Yeah, well, Adam Zampa, he wins the award for the worst haircut at the Champions Trophy, and it certainly made me happy because when it was raining and there wasn't much going on against New Zealand, had a bit of a giggle about his haircut. So they need some fashion advice going forward in the Australian cricket team. Well, listeners, I think we'll wrap it up there. Lisa and I have covered all the news in cricket. Lisa, thanks so much for coming on the show.
That's all right. Always enjoy it, Menners.
What's happening for you now? What are you up to after this?
Well, I've got to head to England for the Women's World Cup. So hopefully the Australian team will win their seventh title, but it's going to be...
So you're commentating on
that? Yeah, commentating on that.
Have they let some female commentators into an ICC event?
Yes, they have. They're very good at that. So I'm there with Melanie Jones, Alison Mitchell, Anjum Chopra, Ian Bishop will be there as well, Sanjay Mandrake, Alan Wilkins. I think Isha Guha is joining as well.
So you can tell Sanjay about his rehearsals on the IPL.
I will. He will not be happy. but it should be a great tournament because the fact that we had the ICC champions, sorry, the women's championship where the top eight teams played each other over the last few years means that they're not coming into the tournament unaware of what Pakistan or West Indies or other countries will do, can perform. So I think there's probably three countries that will perform well, England, New Zealand and Australia, with Australia to win.
Yeah, and interesting to see how the interest level in Australia is towards this campaign on the back of two successful WBBL summers that now, you know, a lot of the general public will know these players playing for the Southern Stars and get behind them, and hopefully they'll lift the title.
Yeah, fingers crossed. You'll have to let me know if there's a lot of interest back home.
I will. Well, Lisa, take care and thanks again. Listeners, thanks so much for downloading the Australian Cricket Podcast. We'll be back next week with a full review of the Australia v England clash.